Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and our Week in IndyCar show. This week we have my man George Steinbrenner, the 29th, young George Steinbrenner, IndyCar's newest team owner. So we're going to have George on here in just a little bit. Had about 45 minutes with him and got many, many questions in, a lot of them great. They're now coming in from the Reddit IndyCar group, along with Twitter and Facebook, which has been our staple all along. Also have, what, 5, 6, 7 or so for me. And knowing that George only had about 45 minutes, since his family's New York Yankees are in the midst of Major League Baseball playoffs with the Red Sox, bit of a tight window for him. So rather than using that 45 minutes to pose your questions to him and answer the ones that were for me, I've broken out the ones that are just for me that I will get to here in just a moment. And by doing that, we're actually able to put, I think, about 90% of your questions in front of George and get them answered. So good stuff. Thanks for sending those in. I want to just extend another general thanks again to all of you and so many people for just whether it is the offer of prayers, the kind thoughts, the offers, if you need anything, let me know, whatever it is. It has been humbling, incredibly humbling, just to know that so many folks like yourselves and so many others that I know have just contacted me by text, by email, calls, you name it, to just share a lot of love. My wife and I are now about 2 weeks into this breast cancer diagnosis, and we thought we had a plan in place, a very specific regimen and timeline for treatment and such, and that's now been blown a little bit wide open. We're continuing to seek medical advice and interview oncologists and surgeons and you name it, all the things. There's a lot of moving parts to this, as I've found out. I guess you could also say, well, duh, Pruitt, you'd kind of expect that, wouldn't you? Well, you know me. No, I hadn't maybe thought that all the way through. But nonetheless, thank you. If anything, I need to keep going back through email and texts, because the one thing I'm afraid of is I have not responded to every single person that has sent in just these really warm, positive, and encouraging gestures. So if you're one of them, A, I suck, and B, I will do my best to make sure that I get back and say thank you directly. But yeah, just amazing. Truly, truly amazing. A couple other things we could cover off to begin. Continue to get questions every week, as I think every person who covers IndyCar gets every week, on the topic of McLaren. Are they in? Are they out? I don't know. It's just growing and growing to feel more and more like a rash. I wish we could just get confirmation that it's here to stay, or it's gonna go away and disappear. But this just semi-pregnant stage, yeah, it's fun. Heard some rumors last week, unsubstantiated rumors, that there might have been notification within the Andretti team that things were not going forward with McLaren. Then heard some other commentary that no, that was 100% wrong. Not that things were going forward, but that there had been nothing said in terms of it's definitely off. It leads me to come back to that place of I have no idea, so it's not even worth writing about. Just figured I'd mention that rumors continue to build as to what will or won't happen, what has or hasn't been said. We'll see. We will see. We also know that McLaren is not limiting their conversations, at least if you take Zach Brown's words at face value, that they're not limiting themselves to ongoing discussions with Andretti, so who knows where all that will end up. Another interesting thing, too, I think, no guarantee, but I think within the next week to 2 weeks, we'll have pretty good direction on Formula One driver Marcus Ericsson and whether he would be coming over. My Racer magazine colleague Chris Medland put up a story last week that young Mr. Ericsson was looking at the Carlin team. We know that's not the only team. Fairly confident that Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports is another place of high interest for him. So I think we might get some sort of direction, whether it's in the form of a public announcement or not, I don't know, but at least behind the scenes, I think we might know if Marcus is going to come over to America next year and play IndyCar. I'd love to see that. I think the guy has talent. I don't think he's been in the best environment to demonstrate that, particularly with a team that has not been uber competitive since he came into F1, but at least in a relatively equal setting here, I think we'd get a better feel for what he's all about and what talent he does or does not have. Another little sidebar there, his teammate at Sauber for 2 years was Felipe Nasr, who is high on the list of interest for one team in the IndyCar paddock, and I know of a second team that is also very interested in him as well. So might be facing a rather unique situation where former Sauber F1 teammates are now essentially fighting over the same seats in IndyCar, since there are so few that are truly left open and available. So we'll see what happens there. As we do every episode, courtesy of our friends at TorontoMotorsports.com, I pick my favorite question from the previous episode, and we send a t-shirt, a Week in IndyCar t-shirt, to that person. And I am picking Andrew C., who sent in a great one for last week's. Actually, we had two Week in IndyCar episodes that went up, one with Mike Hull and also one with Scott Dixon's new teammate, Felix Rosenquist. And Andrew sent in a question, said, for Felix, how often does he get confused with Kevin Magnussen in the European racing scene? And that led to just a really fun and funny tangent for us to go off on, and also showed to me a lot more of just Felix's character and personality. So thanks for that, Andrew. Send me a little DM and get me your t-shirt size and mailing address, and our friends at TorontoMotorsports.com will get you hooked up with some goodies. All right, so I mentioned that I was saving the handful of questions you had directly for me to field those here before we get into good old Jorge, George Steinbrenner. And so let's dive into those. And some of them cover a little bit of ground that I mentioned already about the McLaren team and what is or isn't happening there. Again, there's probably going to be an awesome book written by somebody other than me about what did or didn't happen and all the things that could have taken place and machinations. Who knows? Lots of mystery and intrigue with very little in the way of an actual hard ending and decision so far. But let's go first with Daniel Kincaid. He says, our Scuderia Corsa testing with Oriol Servia, he has posted some cryptic messages. Well, we did see some photos, in cockpit photo of Oriol yesterday in an IndyCar. It looked like he was under the Ray Hall Letterman Lanigan tent. He and I were texting back and forth with one another, and I said, hey, can you tell me what you were doing? And he said, no, I got in trouble for kind of letting people know I was doing that. He did say it was not particularly exciting what he was doing. He did also confirm to me that it was not Scuderia Corsa related. I think the fact that he still had the Scuderia Corsa visor strip on his helmet from the Indy 500 might have been the thing that had folks curious. I think it's also just a case of that's the last helmet he used in competition, so that's the one he threw on, and that's why we still had that branding on it. So nothing, Daniel, according to our man Oriol, that was truly interesting. But yeah, there you go. Let's see. Got a nice comment here. It's more of a comment than anything from Brian Lubinsky, and I'm just sharing because y'all take the time to send these in. He says, Marshall, I know this comment is inappropriate. I disagree there, Brian. He said, but my mother is going through an end-of-life experience like your father, from what I've heard. I will persevere through this. He says, I am not religious, but as I pray for my mother's journey to heaven, I also pray for your wife's health. He said, my mom's a fighter and refuses to die. He said, God, that sounds bad. He said, with myself and my brothers by my mother's side, she keeps fighting no matter what the doctors say. Knowing you, what's the word, vicariously through the internet, that you will be by my wife's side and will fight and help her survive. She's a Marine, Semper Fi. Thanks, man. That's really cool. I am obviously sad to hear that you're going through that with your mother, but having gone through that with my father, as you mentioned, it sucks. There's nothing about it that is positive. It's going to change you. It will, no matter how old you are, it's going to change you in some way. I can say that having lost my father when I was 24, 25, it's a massive, massive blow. But I can also say that while it sucked, and I would rather have him here, you know, I've lived almost half my life without him now. Boy, the things I've had to learn about myself, the things I've had to improve about myself, the strengths that I've had to find. It's a lot of things that come out of this process, and I'm sure many of you have dealt with it with a mother, father, sibling, loved one, you name it. Yeah, it's hard, but I don't know, not trying to sound too Lion King, Circle of Life, whatever, but you know, at 47 years old, I guess I'm seeing situations like this, whether it's losing a parent, having to fight cancer, whatever it is, as part of life, not some big, oh my goodness, the sky is falling type thing. It's still bad, but it's just not viewed as a dark cloud, at least for where I'm at now. It's more of a, yeah, you know, this is often part of the story of one's life, and let's go kick its ass and make sure that it is does not end in a negative way. So let's move on. All right, buddy, I got to use this. This comes in from our pal, Buddy Campbell. He says, at this point, the McLaren announcement is like me waiting to write a paper for class. The Thursday before St. Pete, Zach Brown is furiously putting together an IndyCar by himself in the parking lot. How late can McLaren realistically wait to announce their IndyCar team? Really, buddy, I'd say that is driven by testing. And this is a part where you might think that I have all of this memorized, and I probably did at some point, but it's fallen out of my head. But I'll have to go back and look when teams can start their, when the blackout ends and teams can really start getting back into testing. I would say that if I was still running IndyCar teams, that would be the thing that I was using, buddy, as a drop-dead date. What can I do? What do I need to do to be on track so I can make use of manufacturer tests, rookie tests, whatever it is to get on track, start building knowledge? Also keep in mind that everything we've heard does not involve McLaren going it alone. So in theory, they would have a team to rely on, hopefully to have a car to provide, hopefully have setup information and other things to use. So it's maybe not as critical as a true new team coming in, buying a car, building everything, finding a shop, staffing it, etc. So yeah, they're in a advantageous position, I would say, if things continue to go in this partnership angle that we've only heard about. And again, if that happens, I would just say they wouldn't want to be late for the open of testing. After that, could actually push this fairly late, but knowing that if they do this, they would want to do it in a capacity that would allow them to win a championship in their first season. Yeah, missing out on any on-track opportunity would be the thing they would be protecting against. Let's see, Brian Cohn. Thanks for sending this in, Brian. I know you've been in a fight of your own lately. He says, do drivers have access to the sim units to keep fresh? For example, when Carlos Munoz was going to come back after sitting out all season, is he able to have use of one of the sims to keep his IndyCar skills sharp? He says, I realize the engine manufacturers run and own sims in Indy, so it makes things a bit difficult, and also said good luck to George and his team in 2019. Yeah, we have the simulators that are manufacturer-related. There are some that you can hire, I know, and I'm getting the XTC, MTC, XC, something or other in Southern California that folks flock to and use. Not as big or as amazing as the giant ones that you've seen manufacturers make use of or Formula One teams make use of. But there are some high-quality simulators that can be hired to use to get oneself back in the groove. There are some that teams and or drivers buy and use on their own. I believe that acronym one that I just got completely wrong. I know that they had one towards the back of the Wayne Taylor Racing Transporter last year, for example, which was really interesting. So I believe that's something that Jordan and Ricky were using to keep themselves sharp and get trained for whatever event's coming up. So I'd say, Brian, that while manufacturers do their best to make that time available to their drivers, whether it's the getting back up to speed, getting fresh, or the, hey, we would like you to test this tweak, this arrow thought we have, or this part or piece, or you know something motor-wise that we've changed, there's a lot of different reasons why the manufacturers would make those available to teams. And certainly in the case of some of the finer drivers, I would say, I don't know if they're going into the offseason asking, hey, can I just get some time to keep myself fresh? But I do think that enough of them have their own little steering wheel and pedal contraption at home, or know where they can find one to stay somewhat active if they aren't already out there doing go-karting or one of the other fun and regular on-track things that drivers do when they can't be inside in IndyCar. Let's jump over here to the last couple of questions. These are coming in from Reddit, and thanks to Michael Swope for curating these, the ones that were upvoted the most. Stephen Cause says, how is the search for a title sponsor coming along? Are there any brands that IndyCar is close to making a deal with? I need to plead a little bit of ignorance here, Stephen. Have not had time to catch up with Mark Munoz. Mark Munoz, good Lord, what is wrong with me? Thinking MMA here. With Mark Miles on this, the last time we spoke, he offered, I think, the same kind of we're encouraged having positive dialogue and discussion type verbiage that we've heard for many, many months now. I haven't heard informally that there's someone on the hook, someone ready to sign up. Granted, there's still a few more months left in the year. I don't know if we're going to have that. What I would like to ask Mark, are you committed to having one no matter what? Or would you rather wait until the right deal comes along? And that's both title sponsor of the series, presenting sponsor for the Indy 500, some of the other, you know, official technical partner of the series, official this, that, and the other. What's the motivation here? Is it to have one so the series doesn't look like it is lacking, right? We look at the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. We look at the WeatherTech IMSA Series. We look at the Pirelli World Challenge. Is there a case of wanting to save face to make sure that no matter what, we've got someone's name tagged on the front so it looks like we are a property that is valued and worthy? Or is it a case of, no, we're going to hold on and wait till the money is right and the deal is right, something that's going to really lift and elevate us. We're not just desperate to get a name tacked on the front if the terms aren't overly favorable. My guess is, yes, they're not just going to go after anyone to fill that space, but be interesting to hear from Mark general mindset of priorities on that front. So realize that's a lot of words that don't provide a specific answer, but I'd rather tell you I don't have the answer than try and give you nonsense that doesn't lead you in anywhere of any use whatsoever. Next one goes to the Emperor Tomato Ketchup. That's a great name, by the way, as a lover of ketchup, although the tomato part makes me wonder if there's a non-tomato-based ketchup that I don't know of. That would seem weird to me. Question here is, as we know that beneath the United... Oh, Lord. What is my problem? Question here is, we know that beneath the Universal Aero Kit is the Dilardi W12 that's been in use since 2012. Were there cars that raced at Sonoma this year that could trace their history all the way back to St. Pete in 2012? Do teams even track this information anymore? He says, back when IndyCar had new cars every year, it was fun to know, for example, that Roberto Guerrero's 1992 Indy 500 pole-winning chassis continued to be entered at Indy in the subsequent years. He says, I'm not sure if it's a stat that IndyCar necessarily would want to highlight in the spec formula age, but if I wonder if there are individual chassis that are breaking records for most entries or even wins at Indy and elsewhere. That's a great question. Teams are certainly tracking all of this because it is part of the component lifing program that they are active in. I would say that for the teams that have been in the series since 2012 and still possess chassis that are in action, they would certainly know everywhere it's been used, everything that it's been done. Could be a little bit of question mark here of if a car was sold to another team, did its full provenance, all of everything that it did. Is that something that came along with the car that was shared in a spreadsheet or not? I do know that IndyCar tracks all of this. IndyCar does absolutely know that chassis DW12, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever number it is, where it's been, everything that it's done, if it's been in a big wreck, you name it. Those are things that they track. It's part of the entry list process. It's also part of the technical inspection process. And that also extends beyond just the chassis number. There are lots and lots and lots of parts and pieces that are tagged that have little barcodes that they use to know that this wing is on the car, or this whatever is on the car. So, yeah, there would be that knowledge, definitely. Just not something that I've ever really thought to ask. Could we find out a little bit more to answer some of the questions here about if any records have been broken for most wins, most this, most that? So I'll have to tuck that away as a little something to pursue as an off-season topic. Last one here, we've covered it a little bit, but this one came in from Rowan Walsh, 2734, asking, how is the driver's market? And mentioned Ericsson, Van Dorn, Alonso, those guys, what can we expect? Van Dorn, we know that Stoffel is headed towards Formula E. Marcus Ericsson, we already discussed a little bit. Fernando Alonso, again, we'll hear what if and what he has to say about wanting to do this full-time. The only thing I've heard so far is Indy 500 and would be genuinely surprised, would welcome it, but would be genuinely surprised if he says he wants to do anything more than that next year. But that's part of why we're sitting here waiting to find out what's real and what isn't real. And then also the final question was, are there any aero changes next year? I don't know of any that are coming. I do not know of any physical, we're going to replace the side pods, use this gear with something different, or bolt this on or take that off. I don't know of any real substantive changes at all. The only thing I know is with the aero kits as supplied, I believe teams are just meant to continue using those packages. Only real change that would happen, though, Rowan, is for IndyCar to say, all right, when we go back to this oval, for example, last year we limited you to pick whatever it is, two gurney flaps, this height or that height. This year we're going to allow you three of whichever heights, or we might have limited your front or wing angle to X. We're going to alter that and give you either more freedom to use a wider range or maybe a narrower range. Those kinds of tuning things will certainly evolve as we go back to some ovals. Quite a few, unfortunately, that weren't very compelling this year. So I think that's the one area where we're going to look for to aero changes, but it's just change in how the existing package is used, not a physical replacement of parts and pieces. So that's about all I know on that front. And with that said, let's get into our conversation with George Steinbrenner, IndyCar's newest team owner, on the Week in IndyCar podcast presented by Cooper Tires. George, welcome to the Week in IndyCar. I'm hoping this is the first of many guest visits in the future. Sending out requests for questions from IndyCar fans has been rather fun. We found out that a lot of folks want to know more about you, the team, your plans. We've got some fun questions as well, coming back to hair product and a variety of other things. So it's the usual mix of silliness and insanity. And thanks for being willing to jump into this right in the middle of some playoffs with a team you happen to be very fond of.
Well, thank you for having me, Marshall.
Well, why don't we do this? You are busy, so why don't we jump right in and use our listener questions as the guide to get to know a little bit more about you. I'm going to start off with just some general questions. Our pal Kevin Frederico wrote in and said, hey, as a team owner now in IndyCar, do you have any aspirations in the future to expand your team portfolio, either other forms of motorsports like stock cars, drifting, rallying, etc.?
I'd say I leave that possibility open. Thankfully, I have a long career ahead of me, hopefully. So right now, just focused on starting the IndyCar program, starting to hopefully field a competitive program and in the near future. And so for the time being, there aren't any set plans, but I certainly leave any possibilities open.
Ice drifting, definitely the next big thing. That's where you need to get into ice drifting. We got three different folks who've asked something along the same lines. My friend Jerry Bundle has asked or said he's interested in learning what ignited your passion for racing. David Zitterbart from Australia wants to know how your interest in racing grew towards IndyCar, and Anthony Pienta asked something very similar. What got you hooked on IndyCar? So where did this passion for racing come, and how did that lean towards IndyCar?
So it started with my cousin, Tony Renna, who was a driver in the early 2000s. I was very young when I started watching him drive. I don't have many specific memories. I just have memories of watching him and rooting for him. And then when he passed, I took some time away from the series until the 2006 Indy 500 was the first race that I remember sitting down and watching since he had passed. And that moment I fell in love with the sport again, and just the sport itself, not just rooting for Tony. Now sitting down watching every race I possibly could, and eventually going to every race I possibly could, and stay and getting involved in the sport, sticking around the sport, and finding that passion for it.
I don't know if I still have it. I hope I do, George, but I remember at some point in the late 90s, and this is a thing that was a thing back then, Tony had some promotional pins made up with his name on them and I think his phone number or something that he was handing out to folks. And I don't remember where it was. It might have been an IndyCar race with Atlantics and Indy Lights on the bill, but I just remember bumping into Tony and him giving me one of his Tony Renna promotional pins. And it really isn't something we would think of doing today, but it was kind of cute at the time. So I had a deep affinity for him, just trying to connect with people in a different way. And I wish we still had him here. Let's go to Ryan Terpstra next, who says, who does George pick for the 2019 IndyCar Rookie of the Year? He said, now that you're an owner, you know, owners need to make tough decisions. Maybe this can be your first one. You might have a challenge here because you've got two little hot rods in your own team. We got Felix Rosenquist coming in. We don't know how many additional rookies we're going to have, but all right, man. Who are you putting your money on here?
Man, that's something I haven't really thought of, honestly. Obviously, we have two extremely fast rookies coming to Harding Steinbrenner Racing, both under the age of 20. So Felix obviously is super talented, has been for a while. He's shown he can be fast, and maybe next year experience will edge out. But obviously, I'll be looking forward to our two guys taking it to him.
I like that. You know, I think if nothing else, we need to get Colton and Pato to place some sort of preseason bet, you know, some sort of wager. If you win Rookie of the Year, you know, got to shave my head, got to do something. I mean, got to make somebody pay for not delivering here. Let's see. Got a couple questions, one from Jamie Carr and one from Greg Mann on the topic of now that you are a team owner, any aspirations? Good Lord, man. Folks are piling stuff on you. You haven't even done your first full season yet. But any aspirations of becoming a race promoter, a street race in the Big Apple? And Greg says, you know, would you like the series to return to Watkins Glen or anywhere else? So, George, as if you don't have enough to do already, any desire to become a race promoter at some point in the future?
Again, hasn't really been something I've entertained to a great degree yet. It's certainly something I'd be open to in the future. I would love to see IndyCars return to Watkins Glen, and the logistical nightmare that is the New York City Street Race. I'd love to see if I could eventually help that along in any way possible. But in the future, I don't see why not. But again, right now, my focus is just on the IndyCar program.
And that's the thing too. I think. Nothing against Watkins Glen. I love the place. I love the place. Love its president, Michael Printup. I mean, just great people. I wish we could be back there on a permanent basis. At the same time, I'm also, you know, knowing that IndyCar's been there twice and it hasn't been the big commercial success, I'm not a guy who's a believer of, well, maybe a third time, maybe a fourth time. Maybe we need to look at something different in or around New York. Maybe that street race is mentioned, so that's at least where my head starts to fall. Neil Joseph throws in a question here. What do you hope to accomplish in year one as an IndyCar team owner?
Well, to keep our expectations somewhat realistic, we want to finish as many laps as possible, go out there, be competitive, compete for top tens, and obviously a win would be absolutely massive for everyone on the team. But, you know, compete for top 10s, compete for fast six appearances. We've already done that in Sonoma with Pato. So just going out there, being competitive week in, week out, be consistently competitive every race weekend. And as I said, finishing every lap we can and getting the experience under our belts.
This one's a little bit fun, and it's not asking for dollar amounts or anything like that, just a reaction. Dan Gallagher from Twitter says, question for George, what was the most surprising expense you've encountered as a new team owner, either the item being higher than expected or lower than expected? That's a good one.
I think the parts, that's always a kind of shocking one when you first learn about how much a nose cone costs.
Isn't it? You're like, come on, the thing weighs nothing. It's not that big. What? How do you, where does this number come from? And B, how can I start making some and get that same kind of number that people pay me?
Exactly. Yeah. It's the nose cone. That was the first one for me. That was really surprising.
I like that. Maybe, again, future contract items, just include that, you know, in the next round of driver contracts. Hey, those nose cones, they're yours to bust up because you're paying for them if you do. John Hankins has a nice question here. He's wondering, are you a car guy outside of racing? Are you a person who really enjoys street cars? And if so, do you own anything interesting or something that you take pride in?
I'm becoming more and more of a car guy as my involvement in motorsport goes on. My dad and my uncle are both big car guys. They're big Mopar guys. My dad has a couple of he has a Hemi Charger. He has a couple of GTOs. My uncle has a couple of GTOs. He has a Smokey and the Bandit Trans Am. They're big car guys. I'm starting to get more and more into cars. Right now, I have a Volvo S90. It's the 30 car. It's a great handling car, so I enjoy that quite a bit. Don't have any toys yet, but certainly in the future, we'll be looking to get something along the lines of my uncle, my dad, some old school muscle.
Well, this is predictable, but you're plucking at my heartstrings here. My father was a British and Swedish car mechanic and specialist, with Saabs being probably his Saabs and Volvos being his biggest area of expertise. So good on you for owning a Volvo. I do love the thought. Maybe you need to put in the request of both, or actually all three, you, Pato, and Colton, in the Smokey and the Bandit mobile with big cowboy hats. Now that would be a hell of a photo right there.
That would be.
Jameen Tuttle, great question. He says, how hard was the process of actually moving from Indy Lights to IndyCar, and was curious how much advice or help in that transition process did IndyCar offer you?
So the process was thankfully fairly simple for us with Mike Harding, Brian Barnhart at Harding Racing. They showed interest in Colton and showed interest in Steinbrenner Racing. And so much like our initial partnership with Andretti Autosport and Indy Lights, the puzzle pieces sort of fit very well together for us. And obviously bringing Pato on board as well, Indy Lights champion, building this rookie super team of the two top guys in Lights. I think it became fairly simple for both parties involved and to merge the teams into Harding Steinbrenner Racing. And on the side of advice, I mean, and IndyCar's been so helpful for us because obviously they've been very helpful for new teams coming on board and filling out their field and to have a young owner and two very young drivers, keeping Mike Harding in the sport and growing, helping grow his program as well. So of course IndyCar's been nothing but helpful for us.
And I would imagine as well, I shouldn't say imagine, I know that as someone who, you're very observative, as I've seen, George. You're not someone who's constantly running around just chatting all the time, looking for attention. You seem to be someone who is very locked into the observe, onboard whatever you see process or method-wise that would benefit you. I would assume as well, extending the question here a bit, that spending a couple of years with the Andretti Autosport Indy Lights team is great for Colton, great for all that, but I'm sure that you were there too, really taking a lot of mental notes of what you saw and how to, you know, assist whatever you're going to do when you did transfer upwards.
Of course, yes. The Andretti, any Andretti program, you'll see, if you sit back and observe, you'll see professionals at their best in the Lights program, having Michael Andretti, J.F. Thorman, have Don Lambert, our team manager, Rob Edwards, the COO of Andretti Autosport, just being able to, on the pit wall, just watching them do their thing, at the shop, sitting, watching them do their thing, it's really, it's impressive, and to be able to learn from them the past two seasons, it was the best way I think I could have had my introduction and orientation into the sport.
Mike Jablow has a question and wonders if you've ever had aspirations of being a driver.
I never really did. I never thought of getting behind the wheel, really, ever. A lot of my heroes growing up were on the sports business side, starting with my grandfather, of course, and then as I told you in Sonoma, seeing when I'd go to races and I'd see Roger Penske, Michael Andretti, AJ Foyt. Yeah. Bobby Rahal, those are the guys who I looked up to more so than the drivers, though the drivers are pretty cool too. Looking up to the team owners, and because it was the world that I'd grown up admiring with my grandfather and now my father and my uncle. So, I never really had aspirations to sit behind the wheel.
I did. I did a little bit of sitting behind the wheel. Then I realized my best place was standing outside of the cockpit. So I'm glad you at least saved yourself the humiliation that I didn't save myself. You answered this question for the most part, but I like this angle that Don Davis has brought in. He says, most rookie drivers have incremental goals in IndyCar, first qualifying the top 15, then top 10, top 6, etc. He says, with Pato making the Firestone Fast 6 in his rookie debut, does that change or recalibrate your expectations for next season? And I like that because, you know, everything you mentioned, look, we want to be modest about our goals and, you know, of course we'd like to do well, but we don't want to be crazy. And then you got frickin' award here. Kind of puts a little pressure on you. It doesn't make it all that hard to say, yeah, no expectations. The kid lights up IndyCar on his debut. Does that make you recalibrate expectations at all, knowing that maybe you could have more of that? Or do you try not to let that voice grow in the back of your head?
We try our hardest not to let it grow. Pato's debut was spectacular. And the team put in such a great effort to put him first in the Fast 6 and then bring him home in a top 10 position. So to kind of reel back our expectations a little bit was important to us. Obviously, now we know that we can be competitive and put a car in the Fast 6, but we think maybe to start out, we might want to curb those expectations a little bit. So come St. Pete, if we don't quite go to those heights, we don't get very disappointed.
No, that's smart. Jordan Darwin has a question here. It says, what's the favorite race you look forward to the most each year? And then also, is there a favorite race you've watched or attended in person that might be different?
Well, the 500's the obvious choice, but I feel like he might not be counting that.
Yeah, we're looking for the and we all count the 500 as the pinnacle here, but we usually have that little secret one where you go, oh, really? Oh, okay. I don't know about that. Is there kind of a side favorite that you like that isn't the 500?
I do love Road America. I love the track at Road America, 4 miles, high speeds, and a great atmosphere, great place to take a camper and have a nice weekend with friends and family. St. Pete is a special one for me because I grew up, I was born and raised about 20 minutes north of St. Pete in Clearwater Beach. So I think St. Pete and Road America are the two ones that are special to me for different reasons.
Nice. Well, Jordan has a second question, and we also have one we've asked our friends at the Reddit IndyCar group to start sending in questions too, and they're both on the same lines of engines. And although some of the questions are a little bit more pointed, I'll throw this back out to one that's maybe one I know that you can answer without getting into specifics that you wouldn't be able to otherwise. So coming in from Jordan, also on Reddit, from L. Jones Areno, any thoughts, George, on the timeline for when you will be able to make a decision on what power plant you will be able to use next season? As someone asked, you know, what's taken so long? To which I replied, the season ended 3 weeks ago. The team announced it was going to be a thing 3 weeks ago. So it's not as if we don't have plenty of time, but just curious when you think we might have some news on which direction you're headed.
We don't really have much of a timeline yet. As you said, it was 3 weeks ago that the team was announced, and it was around then where the baseline discussions began. So for us, we don't really have a timeline yet. But it'll definitely be in the next few months, or else we're in trouble. But I don't think it'll take too long.
Let me ask a follow-up to that. Knowing that negotiations, coming up with whatever terms that are most favorable for you or any team, this aspect of deciding on an engine supplier, seeing which can offer what, etc., it's one of the bigger things you're going to do as a young team owner. What has this process been like for you? Again, not speaking about Honda or Chevy specifically, but just for you. Is this something that you've enjoyed getting your hands in on and working out all the details and learning it and such? Has it been easier, harder? What's it been like? Because I know it's tough for many teams.
It's one of the bigger decisions that you'll make as a team in IndyCar. So it's taking it delicately, taking it slowly, really weighing out all our options. And I've really enjoyed being part of the process. It's the first big IndyCar decision I'm going to be a part of. So it's been a great experience so far, and will continue to be.
Couple of final general questions before we move into some fun stuff on the baseball front and the few other items. Mike Shaw asks, what is the long-term goal of this team? Is it keeping the drivers and engineers for a year or two and then, you know, shuffle in some other new blood, you know, kind of along that junior development team mindset? Or is it trying to, frankly, start off with building with everyone you've announced and hopefully stay with them for many years to come?
I think a lot of that will sort of sort itself out in the future. Of course, we don't see ourselves as a junior development program. We see ourselves as a potentially competitive IndyCar program. How long individual pieces stick around will really depend on how we do in this first season, how our relationship builds moving forward with the drivers, the engineers, the mechanics, the team as a whole. So we don't really have a set direction yet in terms of junior development, standalone program. We're not sure yet, but right now we just want to go out there and be as competitive as possible with the pieces we have, and we're going to let the puzzle pieces fall where they will.
Jonathan Wesley poses something that's fairly interesting, and it's been an age-old question for many teams. He says, do you anticipate any difficulties in chassis setup or feedback from two rookie drivers? And do you anticipate being able to lean on that, you know, long or somewhat ongoing relationship with Andretti if there's any need there? And he's also curious if you're going to have any team orders between the two, if they're fighting over the same piece of turf, or if it's going to be a have at it, boys type approach.
So to the first, with the chassis feedback, both of them have such different driving styles. Colton is very, very good with technical feedback. He'll do
three laps in a test coming, and he'll tell you what you need to, what direction he thinks we need to go in. For Pato, he drives very much what you give him. He's very naturally reactionary with the wheel. So the two different driving styles lend themselves to we have a guy who can come in and tell us what needs to be changed, much like his dad knows what direction he wants the car to go. And Pato, you can take him out there and he'll drive what you give him. And you can take a little bit about what Colton gives and put him in Pato's car. And Pato's starting to learn how to give feedback as well and not just drive whatever you give him. And I think having Colton as his teammate in that regard can be very helpful. And Colton having Pato as his teammate, being a little more reactionary as well with what we give him. And I think they'll complement each other very well.
It's another thing that I think is so impressive and deserves more well, I'm sure folks will lend more recognition, George, once you get into your first full season here, but you have not assembled a driver roster of two people that are the same. They are so different on track that I can only imagine they will complement one another in the engineering trailer, and not just from a, you know, try this anti-roll bar, et cetera, but also, oh, I didn't know you could do that in that corner. And, oh, you know, the way they go about making their speed is different enough as well, where I think even though they will be rookies, I think they're going to highlight a lot of things for one another that will help elevate the two from just looking at data and picking apart how to improve themselves in ways they might not have known was possible.
Exactly, and that's one of the advantages of having more than one car in a team and having two drivers with such different styles. One might be better under braking in one turn, one might carry more speed into another, and they learn off of each other, and it's going to be exciting to see that relationship start to build in the engineering trailer.
Is that side something that interests you as well, George, the engineering side, the looking at data from your drivers on, you know, your laptop or iPad or whatever it might be, and trying to really get into that side? I'm not saying get in the middle of all that, but at least on board as much of that knowledge as possible?
Yeah, no, I won't get into the middle of it. Obviously, having my uncle Chris Simmons as around, it's always sort of been something that's interested me, being on the pit stand, seeing the data and learning what the data is and learning how to implement it. It's really, really fascinating. It's one of the more fascinating parts of IndyCar racing is the data usage and I guess I could use the word analytics.
Yep.
That are involved in IndyCar, much like in baseball, it's very data driven. And it was one of the first sports to be very data-driven, so it's something really cool to learn about.
I will bore you with stories next time I see you about the first time I started working with an onboard data system in, I think, 89 or so, and you will laugh at how kind of caveman-esque it was, but that's what it was. Well, the analytics part is kind of a perfect segue into a lot of the questions we got from folks related to baseball and family connections there. Go to the first one from Ralph Hibbard. Hey, Ralph. Ralph's a good pal. Mr. Steinbrenner. I love this. God, you're young to be called Mr., but hey, we'll go with it. You've been around elite baseball players your entire life, and now elite IndyCar drivers. Are there any similar traits that you see between them, or things that make them unique and completely different?
There's a couple of similarities. A lot of, pre-game ritual. That's something you'll see in a lot of sports. Superstition, something you'll see a lot between baseball players and racing drivers, two of the most superstitious types of athletes there are. And pregame preparation, superstition, that's something. The differences, the type of fitness, you know, with a baseball player, it's a lot in the legs, a lot in the arms. Stamina isn't as important, but as you see in racing, stamina is everything. Cardio is everything. So just interesting to see the the different type of specialization to the highest degree in both sports is always something cool to see. You know, an elite baseball player being at the top of his physical level, and an IndyCar driver being at the top of his physical level, but on a completely different spectrum.
Let's go to Casey Boynton's question next. He says, do you feel that with your association with such a successful baseball team, you'll be able to bring more notoriety and maybe even sponsors to IndyCar? And if so, how do you plan to do it? And do you mind if I throw in that again, man? At your age, with what you're trying to do and also having to do it for the first time, I know you've kind of answered this before in a few different ways, and you said anything I can do to help. I am kind of blown away. I'm not blowing smoke here, but I am kind of blown away that you aren't just saying, look, I just want to run the frickin' IndyCar team. I don't want to promote the thing. I'm not responsible for elevating IndyCar and fixing all of it. But you do seem to have a bit of a spirit of, hey, if I can do that as well, count me in.
Yes, of course. I love IndyCar. So not just, you know, going out there and running the cars on Thursday to Sunday and then going home and waiting for the next weekend. You know, promoting the series is I think going to be a big part of what I do moving forward. We have a event every year leading up to St. Pete at the stadium in Tampa for spring training, because the timing works out very well. Obviously, the announcement we made at Yankee Stadium made a big to-do about it, and so trying to bring IndyCar racing to the Yankee fans and to the baseball world, to people who, you know, in New York City, there's not much auto racing around because there's not really anywhere to do it. So for us, just bringing IndyCar to the Yankee fan base and spreading it around as much as possible, because I love seeing the sport I love so much grow. And so to do whatever I can to do so, it's definitely something I'll do moving forward.
One of the things that you hear about just living in America is the New York market is the hardest to crack for anything that's new or not just already a part of the culture. Do you have any feeling as for whether IndyCar, which as you mentioned, is not exactly something folks are waking up each morning and cracking open the newspaper to read about, you know, what Ryan Hunter Ray had for breakfast. Any feeling as to whether this is going to be one of the harder nuts to crack, or how you might start to get a little bit of love from a region that has been, you know, somewhat indifferent?
As you said, I think it will be a really hard nut to crack. We have a foundation with my family and with the Yankees in New York already, which makes it a little simpler, but it's not going to be simple at all, really. We're new to it. We just started sort of branching out, and so we don't know yet, really. But we know it's going to be very difficult. But we'll have to get creative in the ways that we spread the word of IndyCar to the people of New York City.
Chad Pritchard, following up the mention of the team launch at Yankee Stadium, was curious if there will be any activation, either IndyCar related or team related, at games going forward to help further expose the series to the fans sitting in the grandstands.
It's something we've entertained the idea of. We want to get really creative with it. Obviously, during the announcement, we had Pato and Colton throughout the first pitch. We gave Aaron Boone a steering wheel from last year's Indy 500. And we sell Steinbrenner Racing hats through our partnership with New Era Cap at Yankee Stadium, starting recently. And so, just planting the seed, and then finding creative ways to activate at Yankee Stadium, at Steinbrenner Field in Tampa, and get creative with it, and as I said again, spread the word of IndyCar.
Jeff Barak is curious about anything you've observed in noticeable differences between IndyCar's ladder system with the Road to Indy and baseball's minor league system. And he's curious if there's maybe anything from baseball's farm system you'd like to see applied to the open wheel ladder?
Well, yeah, there's an obvious similarity there. Anytime I explain my involvement in Indy Lights to someone, especially in baseball, I attribute it to AAA baseball.
Mm.
We're the Rail Riders.
Yeah.
And it's a unique in open wheel racing because you don't only see the drivers move up, or mechanics or engineers, the coaches per se, but you see teams as well. You don't see the Indianapolis Indians making it to the major leagues anytime soon. So that's the big difference in IndyCar that I've been able to be a part of, thankfully, to be able to move not only players and coaches, or in this case as mechanics, engineers, but teams as well. You see it with Ricardo Juncos, Trevor Carlin, Sam Schmidt, Ricardo going from karts all the way to IndyCar. So that's the biggest difference that I've been able to enjoy is the fact that you can move a team from level to level and maintain teams at each level.
Let's see, we've got one more here on the baseball angle, and we got a lot of this question in different forms. I'll use the two from Todd Hutchins and John Olsikowski. Are there any plans to cross-promote IndyCar with the Yankees in terms of a pinstripe liveried car? Man, I'm telling you, there appears to be a fairly solid IndyCar fan base who is dying to see pinstripes on at least one of your cars. Too crazy? Is that kind of... I don't know. That almost seems like it would be violating some sort of unwritten rule. But I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Well, in terms of subtle pinstripes, I mean, we had last season we had pinstripes on the shock cover of the 98 Lights car.
True.
In terms of a full-bodied pinstripe livery, we're not. It's something we've talked about at base level. Not something we have set plans for. In terms of logos, there's some MLB market logistics we'd have to get around. So it's not as simple as just slapping the NY on the car. So there's some things we'd have to work around. And obviously, we'd have to gauge fan base interest. So for us, it's in the cards. It's something that it's one of the first things people ask.
Absolutely.
And it's one of the first things we talked about and you might see it in the future, but no guarantees.
When I did my first Indy 500 in 97, we were one of the associate sponsors, or I guess co-primary, were the Arizona Diamondbacks. They were about to make their MLB debut, and they sent over a bunch of things, and I guess we all, as the crew, we had some jerseys made up that were our crew shirts, as did our driver. And he was still just going to go into the race with his normal, you know, fire suit. And we're like, well, hey, wait a minute. Why don't we unstitch all the logos and your last name off the back of the jersey that they sent? And we ended up having the seamstress do up his fire suit. I guess, granted, not everything that we put on it was actually fireproof, so that might not have been very smart. But we did at least try and make his fire suit look a little bit like a Diamondback jersey. So who knows? Well, I'll look forward to seeing the creativity that comes out, whether it's driver apparel, crew apparel, et cetera, et cetera. Let's shift over to a couple of family questions, and we'll close with some of the fun ones that have come in. Apologize also that I'm asking some things you can probably fall asleep and answer here, but it's, I guess you're accustomed to it by now. Vincent Anderson, Vinny Taibbi, and a few others ask about your last name, and whether you feel any pressure to live up to all that the Steinbrenner name has achieved throughout the years. And also, Vincent throws in asking, was your family cool with your motor racing team ownership ambitions?
To the first point, the name Steinbrenner, it's a hard name to not be recognized with. If someone knows who my grandfather was, it's not like a... I'm not John Henry's son, or John Henry's grandson of the Boston Red Sox. So, the name Steinbrenner is recognizable. There's not many people in America with that last name. So the recognizability aspect puts a little more pressure. But but it opens, it also opens a lot more doors for prospective partners and sponsors to see that name, and it gives me, thankfully it gives me a little bit of a boost in legitimacy right off the bat, because of what my grandfather and my father and my uncle have laid out, my whole family really has laid out. So there's pressures, but there's also a whole lot of opportunity.
I also love the fact that in probably 5 or 10 of the questions that we've gotten, George, there's some form of addition at the end. By the way, I hate the Yankees, but in the best way possible, Pirates fan here, Red Sox fan. So I love the fact that folks are welcoming you, but also want you to know that, damn it, I'm still rooting for my, you know, my team or whomever the rival. That's the way it should be. I mean, you know, look, I grew up as a Pirates fan, and that's because our hometown San Francisco Giants sucked at the time, and the A's were also a complete mess. And granted, the A's weren't as much of a mess this year, but Bay Area baseball hasn't exactly been a wonderful thing the last couple of years. But maybe the Giants will get back to a World Series before I hit 50. Who knows? That's a goal here. All right, let's round up, my man, with some fun questions. Number one goes to some guy on Twitter, at Colton Herta. Not exactly sure who that might be, but that guy sent in a question asking, how much longer can I crash the house rent-free? Are you telling me, George, you got a freeloading IndyCar driver sleeping on the couch? I mean, what's going on here?
He's not on the couch. He has, we have a guest room for him.
Okay.
But as long as he's out in Southern California, you know, anytime he comes to Indy, of course, he'll stay at the house. But, you know, once he gets his own place in Indy, we won't have to worry about that.
Yeah. I mean, granted, the Herdas did a pretty good job of raising that kid, but I am still mildly concerned about him being in Indianapolis with a lot of free time. I see mischief. There's an episode of Cops just waiting to be filmed with him going out and getting in a lot of trouble. Let's see. Andrew Miller asks, has AJ Foyt told you to get a haircut yet? And that, I can guarantee you, will happen at some point if it hasn't already.
He's not the only one. I actually did just get it cut yesterday. Breaking news. I'm now high and tight.
What?
No more locks.
What is going on, man? Don't tell me you've sold out already. You were, you know, we lost Jer Hildebrand full-time with, you know, the frickin', the man locks, the super flowing hair. I had you to count on, and don't tell me you sold out already.
I wouldn't call it selling out. You know, I had the long hair for about 3 years, you know, just switching things up a little
bit. Okay, all right. Well, there, you know, you can grow it back, I guess. You can grow it back. Continuing on the hair theme, David Simmons asks, who uses more hair product, you or Colton?
Well, now it might be tied, but Ooh. Beforehand, it was Colton, because I actually didn't use much hair product with my long hair. I'd just shampoo and blow dry, so I think the edge went to Colton, but now I don't know. Now it might be close.
What about Award? That guy seems to climb out of the car and his hair is almost exactly the way it was before he put on his helmet. I don't know what's going on there. There has to be some sort of nuclear products going in on top of his head as well.
Yeah, maybe actually the edge might go to Pato there.
Love it. Well, I threw this in the fun category to close here, and I just like it because it seems... I think it'll tell us more about your thought process. This comes in from our pal Tim Calabro on Twitter. He said, what made 2019 the time for you to get into IndyCar opposed to 2020 or 2021? And he also asks, would this IndyCar program exist if Pato and Herdamania 2.0 were not available to you?
Well, not entirely sure, because a lot of why we moved up in 2019 and formed Harding Steinbrenner was because of Colton and Pato's availability, and so I'm not sure where we would be as of as of start of season 2019 if it weren't for those two. It's part of why Mike Harding came to us and why we formed the partnership and why we're competing next year. So couldn't tell you, but we're thankful for those two kids coming around and gonna have some fun next year.
Amen to that. Last one for you, George, and just off the top of my head here, what does the rest of the year look like for you on the racing front? No, obviously you've still got hopefully aspirations of baseball continuing further into October, but what's the rest of the year like for you, getting this IndyCar team of yours ready to compete and hit the ground for a full season next year?
As of the end of October for the Yankees, it'll be full sail ahead in money raising, much like many other teams in the paddock. It'll be Harding Steinbrenner, nose to the grindstone, go out and fund this program.
Well, best of luck to you, my man. So happy that we're going to have you coming in along with those crazy drivers of yours, and high times as well. You look at where IndyCar is headed, you look at a car count where we're expecting 25-ish, maybe more at most rounds. You look at all the young talent coming in, both now on the owner side and the driving side. You look at some of the great themes about the veterans, like Dixon winning his fifth championship, Rossi coming on strong. You not only have you picked a great year to come in, but I'm glad that you and others are going to add to what I think is going to be a pretty amazing 2019. So thanks again for spending some time with us, George, and I look forward to speaking to you again soon.
All right, Marshall, thanks for having me.